Reform or Revolution by Rosa Luxemburg. Chapter 10. Opportunism and Theory in Practice. Bernstein's book is of great importance to the German and the international labor movement. It is the first attempt to give a theoretic base to the opportunist currents common in the social democracy. These currents may be said to have existed for a long time in our movement, if we take into consideration such sporadic manifestations of opportunism as the question of subsidization of steamers. But it is only since about 1890, with the suppression of the anti-socialist laws, that we have had a trend of opportunism of a clearly defined character. Vollmar's state socialism, the vote on the Bavarian budget, the agrarian socialism of South Germany, Heine's policy of compensation, Schippel's stand on tariffs and militarism, are the high points in the development of our opportunist practice. What appears to characterize this practice above all? A certain hostility to theory. This is quite natural, for our theory, that is, the principles of scientific socialism, impose clearly marked limitations to practical activity, insofar as it concerns the aims of this activity, the means used in attaining these aims, and the method employed in this activity. It is quite natural for people who run after immediate, practical results to want to free themselves from such limitations and to render their practice independent of our theory. However, this outlook is refuted by every attempt to apply it in reality. State socialism, agrarian socialism, the policy of compensation, the question of the army, all constituted defeats to our opportunism. It is clear that, if this current is to maintain itself, it must try to destroy the principles of our theory and elaborate a theory of its own. Bernstein's book is precisely an effort in that direction. That is why at Stuttgart, all the opportunist elements in our party immediately grouped themselves around Bernstein's banner. If the opportunist currents in the practical activity of our party are an entirely natural phenomenon which can be explained in the light of the special conditions of our activity and its development, Bernstein's theory is no less natural an attempt to group these currents into a general theoretic expression, an attempt to elaborate its own theoretic conditions and the break with scientific socialism. That is why the published expression of Bernstein's ideas should be recognized as a theoretic test for opportunism and as its first scientific legitimization. What was the result of this test? We have seen the result. Opportunism is not a position to elaborate a positive theory capable of withstanding criticism. All it can do is to attack various isolated theses of Marxist theory, and, just because Marxist doctrine constitutes one solidly constructed edifice, hope by this means to shake the entire system from the top to its foundation. This shows that opportunist practice is essentially irreconcilable with Marxism. But it also proves that opportunism is incompatible with socialism, the socialist movement, in general. That its internal tendency is to push the labor movement into bourgeois paths. That opportunism tends to paralyze completely the proletarian class struggle. The latter, considered historically, has evidently nothing to do with Marxist doctrine. For, Before Marx and independently from him, there have been labor movements and various socialist doctrines, each of which, in its way, was the theoretic expression corresponding to the conditions of the time, of the struggle of the working class for emancipation. The theory that consists in basing socialism on the moral notion of justice, on a struggle against the mode of distribution, instead of basing it on a struggle against the mode of production, the conception of the class antagonism as an antagonism between the poor and the rich, the effort to graft the cooperative principle on capitalist economy, all the nice notions found in Bernstein's doctrine already existed before him. And these theories were, in their time, in spite of their insufficiency, effective theories of the proletarian class struggle. They were the children's seven-league boots, thanks to which the proletariat learned to walk upon the scene of history. But after the development of the class struggle, and its reflex in its social conditions had led to the abandonment of these theories, and to the elaboration of the principles of scientific socialism, there could be no socialism, at least in Germany, outside of Marxist socialism, and there could be no socialist class struggle outside of the social democracy. From then on, socialism and Marxism, the proletarian struggle for emancipation and the social democracy, were identical. This is why the return to pre-Marxist socialist theories no longer signifies today a return to the seven-league boots of the childhood of the proletariat, but a return to the puny, worn-out slippers of the bourgeoisie. Bernstein's theory was the first, and at the same time the last, attempt to give a theoretic base to opportunism. It is the last, because in Bernstein's system, opportunism has gone, negatively through its renunciation of scientific socialism, positively through its marshaling of every bit of theoretic confusion possible, as far as it can. In Bernstein's book, opportunism has crowned its theoretic development, just as it completed its practical development in the position taken by Schippel on the question of militarism, and has reached its ultimate conclusion. Marxist doctrine cannot only refute opportunism theoretically. It alone can explain opportunism as an historic phenomenon in the development of the party. The forward march of the proletariat, on a world historic scale, to its final victory is not, indeed, so simple a thing. The peculiar character of this movement resides precisely in the fact that here, for the first time in history, the popular masses themselves, in opposition to the ruling classes, are to impose their will, but they must effect this outside of the present society, beyond the existing society. The masses can only form in a constant struggle against the existing social order. The union of the broad popular masses with an aim reaching beyond the existing social order, the union of the daily struggle with the great world transformation, that is the task of the social democratic movement, which must logically grope on its road of development between the following two rocks, abandoning the mass character of the party or abandoning its final aim, falling into bourgeois reformism or into sectarianism, anarchism, or opportunism. In its theoretic arsenal, Marxist doctrine furnished, more than half a century ago, arms that are effective against both of two extremes. But because our movement is a mass movement, and because the dangers menacing it are not derived from the human brain, but from social conditions, Marxist doctrine could not assure us, in advance and once for always, like the anarchist and opportunist tendencies. The latter can be overcome only as we pass from the domain of theory to the domain of practice, but only with the help of the arms furnished us by Marx. Bourgeois revolutions, wrote Marx a half century ago, beginning of large, long quote. Like those of the 18th century, rush onward rapidly from success to success. Their stage effects outbid one another. Men and things seem to be set in flaming brilliance. Ecstasy is the prevailing spirit. But they are short-lived. They reach their climax speedily, and then society relapses into a long fit of nervous reaction before it learns how to appropriate the fruits of its period of feverish excitement. Proletarian revolutions, on the contrary, such as those of the 19th century, criticize themselves constantly interrupt themselves in their own course, come back to what seems to have been accomplished in order to start anew, scorn with cruel thoroughness the half measures, weakness, and meanness of their first attempts, seem to throw down their adversary only to enable him to draw fresh strength from the earth and again to rise up against them in more gigantic stature. Constantly recoil in fear before the undefined monster magnitude of their own objects. Until finally that situation is created which renders all retreats impossible and conditions themselves cry out, Hic rotus hic salta. Here is the rose, and here we must dance. End quote from the 18th Brumaire. This has remained true even after the elaboration of the doctrine of scientific socialism. The proletarian movement has not as yet, all at once, become social democratic, even in Germany. But it is becoming more social democratic, surmounting the extreme deviations of anarchism and opportunism, both of which are only determining phases of the development of the social democracy, considered as a process. For these reasons, we must say that the surprising thing here is not the appearance of an opportunist current, but rather its feebleness. As long as it showed itself in isolated cases of the practical activity of the party, one could suppose that it had a serious political base. But now that it has shown its face in Bernstein's book, one cannot help exclaim with astonishment, "What? Is that all you have to say?" Not the shadow of an original thought. Not a single idea that was not refuted, crushed, reduced into dust by Marxism several decades ago. It was enough for opportunism to speak out to prove it had nothing to say. In the history of our party, that is the only importance of Bernstein's book. Thus, saying goodbye to the mode of thought of the revolutionary proletariat, to dialectics, and to the materialist conception of history, Bernstein can thank them for the attenuating circumstances they provide for his conversion. For only dialectics and the materialist conception of history, magnanimous as they are, could make Bernstein appear as an unconscious, predestined instrument, by means of which the rising working class expresses its momentary weakness, but which, upon closer inspection, it throws aside contemptuously and with pride. End of Reform or Revolution by Rosa Luxemburg. Read by Dessalines.